Now, I know that so many of you are used to every Sunday me getting up here and providing some soaring rhetoric and fancy words and all types of nice analogies. And I have to tell you, you're going to be disappointed. I got nothing this week. It's been one of those kind of weeks. There would be nothing fancy. And some of you looking at me like, it never is. It never is. No. The thing is, it was interesting as I was preparing for this Sunday, one of the things that Jimmy calls me up yesterday, and he's like, hey, it's been a rough week. I'm like, no kidding. He's like, you know, maybe, you know, this week, maybe we can come up with something different, because I imagine you're probably tired, and I am tired, but the interesting thing about the week that I've had is that rather than taking time to kind of regroup and recover, this is actually the perfect time to preach. This is the perfect time to really share just how good God is. Especially considering the topic that we've been on about trusting God, because what you find is that God reveals himself even more in the storms and in the tragedies and in the difficulties in life than very often he does during the blissful and wonderful and happy times. And it's not that God is more or less present there than he is in other times, but very often we see God more clearly when we're going through challenges. We are able to have a more clear perspective, frankly, because we're looking. Sometimes we're not always looking at God. We're not always looking for God. And I want to continue to look at what it means to trust God by looking at a particular example that we, and I'm going to do this in two parts. Let me actually come grab this really quickly. There's a passage, and I'll make reference to this again next week. You don't necessarily have to write this down, but because frankly, you know, many of us have read this, but in Luke chapter 4, you'll find this here kind of tucked away where Jesus is talking to the disciples, and he is going out and he's healing. And then right here in Luke 4, verse 24, he says something that we're going to look at here over the next couple of weeks, where he says, okay, that's chapter 5. That's why I couldn't see it. Luke chapter 4, verse 24, he says, I tell you the truth, he continued, no prophet is accepted in his hometown. I assure you that there were many widows in Israel in Elijah's time when the sky was shut for 3.5 years and there was a severe famine throughout the land. Yet Elijah was not sent to any of them, but to a widow in Zarephath in the region of Sidon. And there were many in Israel with leprosy in the time of Elisha, the prophet, yet not one of them was cleansed, only Naaman the Syrian. Now, I'm going to get into the details of this a little bit more here shortly, but what we find in just those few verses is that Jesus is saying something very important that we have to really embrace in order to fully trust him. He's pointing out that, you know what, there were an awful lot of widows that God could have sent Elijah to, but he sent them to one very specific widow that we're going to look at here shortly. Same thing with Elisha, and we're going to come back to that next week. And when we think about that, what does that mean to us? When we face challenges, when we face problems, when we face difficulties in life, being able to trust God, if we look at it the wrong way, we can feel almost like it's punishment. We can feel like, well, why is God doing this to me and he's not doing it to others? Instead of really embracing the fact that God actually chose you. That he chose you not to punish you, not to harm you, but because he wanted to set you up as an example for others. And whenever we go through difficult times, and let's face it, we're going through some difficult times. But do we trust God? Are we looking at it from the correct lens? And so I want to talk about that a little bit today. The title that I've given the sermon is a very common saying that many of us know. When the going gets tough, how's the rest of it go? The tough get going, right? You know, a lot of times you don't know how tough you are. You don't know your metal. You don't know what you're made of until you're actually forced and tested and pushed beyond your limits. I mentioned how about a month ago or so, I hired a personal trainer who is pushing me. And one of my baseball kids, I work out with him sometimes, and he sent me a text last night. He says, "Coach, what did you do to my legs?" He said, "I can hardly walk." And I said, well, that's the thing. When you train, you push beyond what you think mentally are your limits. You push yourself in such a way that you go past your limits, right? Like, you don't know how strong you are until you are pushed. You don't really know how tough you are until you've been forced sometimes to be tough. This, I was thinking of this. You know, this image came to mind. I was Googling some things. And very often we think of challenges. My wife and I, we talk about this because after the tornado came through earlier this week, one of the things that becomes very apparent, once you kind of get over the shock of it, and once you kind of get over the fact that you walk outside and you went from the same house, the same yard, the same neighborhood, the same street that you've always seen, do you walk around for a few minutes and you realize, I don't even recognize this place? What you figure out very quickly is the tornado didn't just come to your house. It didn't just stop at 1156 and just come here to the church building. No, it actually went all up and around and through here. Those of you all who didn't see it, and I did take some pictures of it, but one of the things that was fascinating about tornadoes, and this is my theory, I have no proof of this, but knowing tornadoes the way I do, being from Ohio, I am convinced that the tornadoes will sometimes, they will split, right? So they'll come to a particular spot, a valley or a building or something, and they will split. And what, looking around the neighborhood, what is clear is that this tornado took a path where it came right here to the church, and it split. There was like literally no damage to the church building where I'm standing right now. Even to the point where the nicely neat manicured bushes and trees and things, I came out right after, directly across the street, probably less than 100 feet over there, their building was laying in the middle of Governors Avenue. The walls and the roof, they were laying right there. There was a tree that was horizontally, directly inside of the front door of the house two doors down. And yet, you come outside and you would look, if you were looking at the church, it was like, oh, they had a rain shower. There was nothing. What you find is that when calamity strikes and when you have struggles, sometimes we can get so caught up on us, the individual, that we're looking at it the wrong way. Yes, it's happening to us and it's happening around us, but it's happening to everybody. The tornado affected an entire community. I woke up this morning, and as I was preparing to come over here, I got an alert on my Weather Channel app that said, oh, by the way, as if the hurricanes and the tornadoes weren't enough, a 5.3 earthquake just comes up through Virginia and North Carolina, right? And you think, man, how can this be happening? But see, that's just it. It's not just happening to me. One of the things I was telling my wife, I said, guess what? The tornado damage, it wasn't that significant to us personally. And the thing is, we'll be able to overcome. There are some people who are trying to figure out what they're going to do about their home, what they're going to do about their lives. So much so that when I talked to State Farm, the insurance company, they said, hey, I'm just letting you know right now, Because I told them, we don't have any real structural damage. They said, okay, well, so here's what's going to happen. Normally, our wait time is 2 or 3 days. It's probably going to be 6 days before we get to you. Because there are actual houses, schools, different government buildings that have been impacted by this. We think about it, and sometimes, and I thought this picture was so interesting, because sometimes we can feel picked on. We can feel like God is almost isolating us. It's like, why does this stuff keep happening to me? Why is it that I'm this, you know, outlier? Why is it I can't seem to get a break where other people have support and other people have families and they have somewhere to go? And it's just like we get into this, why me, why me, why me? Why do I always have to be so tough? Why do I always have to be strong in the face of these issues? And oftentimes what God is trying to get us to do is see it from a different perspective. That, yes, I'm asking you to be tough. Yes, I'm asking you to overcome. Yes, I'm asking you to face these challenges, but it's so that you can be an example for me. And I want to look at that today as we start in the book of Kings, 1 Kings chapter 17. Starting in verse 7, it says, sometime later the brook dried up because there had been no rain in the land. Then the word of the Lord came to him, go at once to Zarephath in the region of Sidon and stay there. I have directed a widow there to supply you with food. So he went to Zarephath. When he came to the town gate, a widow was there gathering sticks. He called her and asked, would you bring me a little water in a jar so that I may have a drink? As she was going to get it, he called, and bring me, please, a piece of bread. As surely as the Lord your God lives, she replied, I don't have any bread, only a handful of flour in a jar and a little olive oil in a jug. I'm gathering a few sticks to take home and make a meal for myself and my son, that we may eat it and die. Elijah said to her, don't be afraid. Go home and do as you have said. But first, make a small loaf of bread for me from what you have and bring it to me. And then make something for yourself and your son. For this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. The jar of flour will not be used up, and the jug of oil will not run dry until the day the Lord sends rain on the land. She went away and did as Elijah had told her. So there was food every day for Elijah and for the woman and her family. For the jar of flour was not used up, and the jug of oil did not run dry, in keeping with the word of the Lord spoken by Elijah. Now, I want to set this up here. Prior to where we picked up in verse 7, Elijah and God are trying to work this thing out because he's prophesying to the people. He's trying to teach the people. And so Elijah does something that is fairly, there's several things here that we're going to look at, but Elijah does something very important. He says, so God, how about we just dry up the sky? We're just going to make sure it doesn't rain for 3.5 years. Now, he doesn't do this to, you know, somehow punish the people or trying to do it just for effect. He's trying to make a point. The people had forgotten about him. They had forgotten about God. They had lost sight of God. He said, we got to do something here. People need to understand that their focus and their attention and their worship needs to be directed at God. So guess what's going to happen? Calamity is going to strike. We're going to see to it that famine and drought and all these things are going to affect the land. So over Israel for 3.5 years, there's no rain. You know what happens when there's no rain? There's no food. Because there's no water, people die of dehydration, dysentery, all types of diseases affect Israel. Because God's trying to get their attention. Sometimes we can look at troubled times, and we can look at disasters, be it a hurricane or an earthquake or a tornado, and we can look at it, and instead of looking at it as, okay, what does God want me to do in this moment, we can start looking at ourselves and feeling pitiful and woe is me, instead of seeing that this is actually a time where God wants you to redirect your focus back on him. He's saying, do you actually trust me? And this example stands out for several reasons. One, because this is the first example. There are other examples of this that will come along later. This is the first example of where God uses one of his prophets or one of his men, his representatives, to go to a foreigner. He says, hey, I want you to go to this foreign land, where this Sidon, this region. He's saying, I want you to go to this foreigner, and I want you to use a woman. Now, that may seem like not that big a deal, but it was highlighted as I was reading about this. There was a Jewish prayer, the prayer that rabbis would often pray with regularity, where it says, hey, thank God, when they would, as they're starting into their worship and their ceremony, thank God that I was not born a slave, a woman, or there was something else. Either way, a foreigner, that's what it was. Thank God that I was not born a slave, a woman, or a foreigner, right? Because these were considered lowly things. These were considered things that were pitiful. You did not, in this society, growing up in Jewish culture, you didn't want to be born a slave, a foreigner, or a woman. Well, this woman was two of these three things at least. So I point that out because God is saying, not only am I going to dry up the sky for 3.5 years and inflict this on Israel, but I'm actually going to use somebody that you don't respect, somebody that you despise, somebody that you look down on, and I'm going to use them and let them be a vessel. Now, this would, you know, God would use other people who were foreigners and who were not Jewish and who were not one of his chosen people later on. You'll see this several other times. But that's not to be ignored, because sometimes when we think of ourselves, when we look at ourselves, when we look at our lives, we can just feel like we're just one of many people. We don't think of ourselves as being particularly important. We don't even think of ourselves as being respected or somebody who should be lifted up as an example. And oftentimes we can approach God that way. Well, I'm just little old me, just me and my house and my little family and my dog or my cat or whatever. Like, I don't think of myself as being that important. And yet God wants to use us to show other people what it means to truly trust him, what it means to truly have faith in him. So he uses this woman who is a foreigner, who is considered lowly and not worthy of respect. And Elijah goes to her and he says, oh, not only am I going to use you, but here's what I want you to do. She clearly didn't think very much of her life expectancy and choices that were going to be in front of her. So she's like, listen, I get it. You want me to feed you, but I really quickly, let me tell you what my plans were. My plans were to go home, fix something to eat for me and my son, and then die. Now, that's pretty bleak, right? That's not the most encouraging outlook. She didn't really have many plans for next month, right? She wasn't thinking, well, what's going to happen after the coronavirus is over? She's like, no, we're going to just eat this last little bit of food, and we don't have much else that's going to be coming. And Elijah says, no, guess what? Actually, you're going to be one person who is not going to have to face what everybody else is going to have to face. You're going to not only survive, but you're going to make it through, and your oil is not going to run out. You're going to have food. You're going to be able to make it through this thing. And we see that it says there, she went away and did as Elijah had told her. She was obedient. She was willing to trust the man of God and what it is that he said, and she was willing to do it. Sometimes we can fast forward to the fact that it says, "For the jar of flour was not used up, and the jug of oil did not run dry, in keeping with the word of the Lord spoken by Elijah." We can fast forward to see the outcome, and we can forget that she trusted and she was obedient before she knew what the outcome was going to be. I was telling you how that's one of the things I was saying to my wife, how, you know, it may be a couple of weeks before the insurance company responds, we clean everything up and we get everything done. But here's the thing, we have to trust God knowing that we're safe in his hands. That our outcome, even if we don't necessarily know what's around the corner, we trust God with the outcome. Because what happens if he doesn't come through in this way? Well, then there's some questions about Elijah, and there's some questions about God that we may have to ask ourselves. But her obedience cannot be questioned. She trusted that God was going to do exactly what it was that she was told he was going to do. Do we have that type of trust when we are facing difficulties? Trusting God means not holding back even when we don't see the immediate outcome in front of us. In an honest moment, a lot of us, if we're human, and I know I'm human, we can look at what we're facing with coronavirus, tornadoes, hurricanes, earthquakes, job loss, record unemployment, whatever you want to, it just feels like, oh my goodness, why is this thing happening to us? And if we're honest, we have to ask ourselves, not do we question, do we doubt, are we afraid, do we have emotions about it? Because unless you're somehow not human, you do. When that tornado came through, it was fascinating. Animals are so smart. We just don't give animals enough credit. My dog will bark at an ambulance that is 2 miles away that passed 10 minutes ago. He will still be barking. As the tornado was approaching, true story, I just did not take the tornado seriously enough until it, like, I jokingly, but really it was kind of serious. I look out the window. After the third time my phone tells me, go take shelter, I said, okay, let me get up and look. So I look out the window, and I'm looking across 13 near the Punch and Run connector where it comes to there, and it's like the tornado's looking me dead in my face, like, why are you still upstairs? Why are you, I told you, they told you to go downstairs. So we snatch everybody up, we run downstairs. But the thing about the dog is, the dog who barks at anything and everything, the dog said nothing. He is sitting there in his little kennel, and he is as quiet as he has ever been in his almost 3 years of life. He is terrified. He didn't bark, he didn't ask to go outside, he didn't want to treat, he didn't want anybody to pet him, he didn't want to get out. He was terrified. Animals are very smart. You know, that's why, you know, when there's a real storm coming, you notice all the birds are gone. The deer, you see them running as fast as they can. It's like, where are they going? Why are they going to the mountains? Oh, that's the flood coming, right? The thing is, the dog is sitting there, and he realizes there's some real danger. Very often, and I point that out because sometimes we look at danger differently. Do we actually understand the magnitude of what's happening? But also, what we're going to look at here in just a second is that sometimes it's not always over after that first occurrence, after that first thing's happened, because trusting God goes beyond just believing that, okay, yeah, God's going to get me through this, and we're going to survive, and we're going to be okay. See, I was talking real tough after the tornado comes through, because tornado comes through, and it lasts, honestly, less than 5 minutes, and then you go outside, and it looks like a war zone. But it doesn't last forever. Most tornadoes come through, and they're kind of quick. They step on you, and then they move on somewhere else, right? So needless to say, I'm telling my wife, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. We're going to be fine. They're going to get the power back on, and the kids are all panicked, and they're like, well, what's going to happen? And it's getting hot because the air conditioner's not running, and I don't have internet, and I can't play my games, and Kendall's like, don't go outside. I'm like, Kendall, the sunshine. No, don't go out there. She's still upset, right? And I'm telling him, it's going to be okay, and everything seemed fine, and Wednesday, slowly powers back on, and then Thursday they get the internet back on. Everything seems to be okay. But then something else happens again. More calamity. More problems. And then suddenly you start questioning. You start feeling the pinch and that pain over and over again. We think about pain and how we deal with pain. I do not know Brenda Shoshana. I do know that she is some type of Zen doctor or whatever. But I found this quote to be very important in how we deal with trusting God whenever we are in pain, be it physically in pain because maybe you're having some health problems, financially, emotionally, spiritually, whatever's going on. It says, we turn pain into suffering by adding all kinds of beliefs and judgments to it. Very often, where the suffering and pain comes from is not just in what is happening to us, but it's because we have expectations and beliefs that we've assigned to this pain. The tornado comes through and we start thinking, what did I do to deserve this, God? You lose your job. Well, God, what did I ever do for this to happen to me? How come I can never catch a break? We have challenges, and then something else will happen. It's like, well, God, couldn't this have waited a little bit longer? I just had a car accident. I'm finally recovering, and now lightning strikes my house. I just lost my brother. Now you're taking my daughter. You're taking my son. And we go through this and we start thinking about it from the wrong lens, when in reality what God is saying is, this is not a punishment. Actually, I'm paying you a very, very big compliment. I'm actually giving you some real credit here by saying, I know that you can handle this. I know that you're tough enough, and I need you to trust me through this, because there are others who, while you may not think very much of your widowed foreigner life, I actually have tons of people watching you, because they know that you trust God. They know that you trust me. And I'm counting on you to be tough enough not to fail. I'm counting on you to continue to hold my hand and walk with me instead of pulling back. Because it's easy for us to say, yeah, I trust God, and we're going to pray that God is going to see us through this coronavirus pandemic. God is going to see us through this tornado or hurricane, or God's going to see us through this financial crisis or health crisis or whatever it is that we're facing. But then you pull back. You pull back your finances. You don't give as much to the church. You don't give as much time to the church. You say, I know that this is great. You know, we've set it up. We got social distancing, and I don't have to sit that close to Linda Hill if I don't want to, and I don't have to sit that close to Leroy if I don't want to. I don't have to sit that close to Sharice if I don't want to. We can keep appropriate distance. And every Sunday we go through the 6 feet and wear your mask, and everybody's, you know, trying to adhere to that. But guess what? Then what happens is you still don't show up. You still won't come. Because you're looking at it not from a trusting God standpoint. You're looking at it from the standpoint of, yeah, I say that I trust God and I believe that God is there, but things keep happening around me and I'm afraid. Because the outcome is uncertain and I don't know what is going to be next. I face so much stuff. And so what we look at is pain and suffering and things that are difficult. Part of the difficulty that we have in dealing with it is because we've placed all types of assumptions and expectations on God, and he's saying, no, 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 no. I'm not paying you to think. I'm not paying you to have the answer. Okay? The whole CDC doesn't have an answer. The whole entire federal government, state government, they don't have an answer. They were talking about schools coming back. My son is at William Henry Middle School, right? And everybody's all caught up in how we're going to come back, whether we're going to do hybrid or in-person classes. And guess what? A tornado comes through and says, you're not going to do anything. We're going to condemn this building. Why? We're just going to take the whole roof off. There was a teacher who was actually there on Tuesday when the tornado came through. She has pictures and videos. She shows where the roof, like literally where her class is, where she's setting up to do her virtual learning because they're going to start first 6 weeks of school at Capital School District, virtual learning. Well, there's not going to be any virtual learning or in-person learning because William Henry Middle School, that roof is gone. And you might think, well, why is all this stuff happening? It's happening because somebody has to trust God. You could look at Israel and think, well, that's like the whole religious establishment at that point. Those are God's chosen people. But God had to go find somebody who was a foreigner. Somebody who was an outsider. Somebody with no respect and no standing to show an example of what it truly means to trust God. But it takes a willing heart. You have to be willing to trust God when everybody else says you're a fool. When everybody else says, that's foolish of you. I wouldn't do that if I were you. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I wouldn't take that risk or take that chance. I wouldn't put myself out there like that. I would pull back. I would hold back. I would be afraid. I would be cautious. You got a lot to think about here. But we see here that trusting God is more than just assigning different beliefs and expectations on Him other than what He put there. I want to finish out here in 1 Kings, starting verse 17 of chapter 17. It says, sometime later, the son of the woman who owned the house became ill. He grew worse and worse, and finally stopped breathing. She says to Elijah, what do you have against me, man of God? Did you come to remind me of my sin and kill my son? Give me your son, Elijah replied. He took him from her arms, carried him to the upper room where he was staying, and laid him on his bed. Then he cried out to the Lord, Lord, my God, have you brought tragedy even on this widow I am staying with by causing her son to die? Then he stretched himself out on the boy three times and cried out to the Lord. Lord, my God, let this boy's life return to him. The Lord heard Elijah's cry, and the boy's life returned to him, and he lived. Elijah picked up the child and carried him down from the room into the house. He gave him to his mother and said, look, your son is alive. Then the woman said to Elijah, now I know that you are a man of God and that the word of the Lord from your mouth is the truth. There's a couple things to point out here. First, you know, I was talking about a first, and that Elijah going to this woman outside of his people, this foreigner, this widow, this is the first time he uses somebody outside of his chosen people in that way. But also we see something here that's done for the first time, and that is that in this example, we see where this woman, her son is getting sick, and then he dies. He stops breathing. No life. And Elijah makes this appeal to God to bring him back, bring his life back. Now, the reason why it matters that this is the first time we see this example is because Elijah has no reason to believe, he has no prior example that this is even something that is possible, much less something that God is willing to do. Yet he prays for it. He prays for something that's impossible. And it wasn't his son. It wasn't any skin off of him. I mean, worst case scenario, this woman kicks him out and says, get out of my house, you know, move on. But the fact is, this isn't his child. He prayed for something impossible, and God responds to this by granting this request. Sometimes when we approach God, when we pray for things, we have to ask ourselves, are we willing to pray for something that is impossible? Are we willing to pray for something that's outside of what fits into our little small minds? Because sometimes we think, well, you know what? This isn't even something that's ever happened before. This could not be done because I've never seen it before. And so therefore, I'm not even going to make this request. I'm certainly not going to do it for somebody else's child. But when we see this going on, when we look around ourselves in our community, when we look around our neighbors, when we see our families, do we pray to God knowing that He is the God of the impossible? Do we understand this to be something real, or is this just some, because we'll tell ourselves that this is the inerrant truth and the word of God, but then we treat it like it's a fairy tale. We treat it like the same God back then isn't consistent and He cannot respond to prayers right now. As much as we have prayed for many things and praying for people's healing and God to intervene in different situations, have we actually prayed, God, protect and make sure that nobody in our number is sick, that nobody faces calamity, that nobody is struck with death? Or how much of our prayer life includes praying for the impossible? But the other thing that I wanted to point out here in just looking at this is this woman's response. She responds very much the same way that many of us have responded to things. She says, like, God, but I trusted you, and I did what you said, and now you're going to take my son's life away? There's a disappointment here. There's almost a disbelief. Like, because sometimes we'll do that. We'll say, but God, I'm trying to do right. I'm trying to be one of the good ones. Why are you allowing this to happen to me? And what God is trying to show us is that the reason why it's happening to you is because, again, I'm using you as an example. You're an ambassador. You are to represent me. How are you going to respond? It's called a stress response. How do you respond when things happen that are bad, that are negative, that cause you pain and cause you discomfort, that cause you to lose out on things? How do you respond to those things? Because your response is what sets you apart. Because guess what? That tornado doesn't care. It doesn't just come to your house. The hurricane doesn't just put water damage on your house. I mentioned how we kind of went through this week, because just as we're kind of, you know, everybody's calming down, and just as the dog started barking again and everything got back to normal, Friday comes along, and there was a flash flood. It lasted about a half hour or so, maybe a little less. Flash flood comes through here on Friday, about 8 o'clock, right? I'm out. I'm getting some food. And I notice as I'm getting in the car, it's like there's a river forming, and it's coming from Governor's Avenue, and it's just going right down all the way to the back. The creek is filling up again. And then as I get to go pick up some food, we ordered out. We had enough this week. I wasn't cooking anything. We order out. I get to Cheddar's to pick up the food, and like I get like four or five different calls and text messages. Hey, we got a problem. There's flooding. I get back to the house. As if the tornado and the roof damage and stuff wasn't enough, and we don't have a fence in anywhere anymore, and trees are laying everywhere, I get back to the house about 8:30, 8:45, about an inch of water throughout the whole basement. Immediately, I'm thinking, because I had a mind in mind I was going to talk about this, but this became very real all of a sudden. It's like, God, wasn't the tornado enough? Did you have to flood the basement? And yet, the response could have been to just sit there, cry. Okay, you know what? I can't take it anymore. We're leaving. I'm out of here. Or you get out the shop vac and you get to work. But it's not about the work. It's not about being tired. It's not about why is this happening to me. It's an example to show others. It wasn't a lift me up or let me prove that I can't be broken. It was a let me prove that God is still there. That God is going to use me for something. And I don't know what that's going to be. Because when Elijah prays this impossible prayer, the woman's response is, now I know that you are a man of God and that the word of the Lord from your mouth is the truth. We want to preach the gospel. We want to teach others what it means to be like Christ. We want people to follow in the same example that we're striving for and being like Christ. But it starts with us being willing to pray for the impossible. I want people to come to church. I want people to study the Bible. I want people to know what it means to be a disciple of Christ. But I have to first be like Christ. I have to first respond in a way that says, even if the rest of the world will start crying or just say, throw their hands up, I'm just going to give up. I have to respond by saying, God, I know that with the tornado and with financial struggles that come with it and waiting for the insurance company and my neighbors are going through it and their houses are being condemned and now you give me a flood, I know that there's something impossible that's going to come of this. What is the impossible thing that God is going to do in response to the coronavirus? What is the impossible thing that God is going to do in response to you losing that family member or loved one? What is the impossible thing that God is going to do? And are you praying for that impossible thing? When our trust in God is tested, we find out just how much he wants to bless us. This woman was blessed. She is an example of being blessed. She is an example for everyone who trusts God and perseveres, but it starts with being willing to trust a God who is the God of the impossible. It starts with us trusting God in such a way that says, I'm not going to allow a circumstance or a situation or even a series of calamities to prevent me from trusting who God is. And I'm going to be blessed not only in my personal life, but I'm also going to be blessed in that others are going to see God more clearly because of who I am and what I'm willing to do for God. A few things I want to close with here. When we think about being chosen by God, that's what we are when we go through struggles. We are chosen by God. He has picked this woman out, this widow, this nobody, according to society standards. He has chosen her just like he has chosen us. Do we honestly believe that we are chosen when we face issues of trust? Do we see things clearly? I still, fortunately, don't need glasses, but I do understand a little bit about progressive lenses. My dad's kind of schooled me on that. Some lenses are better than others. Sometimes it's just a matter of how you're looking out to really understand what it means to be chosen by God. A few questions I want to end with. In challenging times, do I hold back in fear or do I give even more of myself, trusting that God will take care of me? And that's much easier said than done. But our temptation, sometimes we want to hold back. We pull back. We do less. It's easy during coronavirus to say, yeah, we want to be safe. We want to do this. But have you held back? And I don't mean putting yourself in danger and walking around and being around people who you could possibly be infected. I'm not saying do something careless or do something dangerous. But have you held back and used the coronavirus as an excuse to hold back? Because there are other ways for which you can give. This woman said, I don't have much. All I got is some flour and some bread, and we're getting ready to go die. I don't even have expectations here. But she didn't hold back. Are we holding back and using limitations that we may have as an excuse? I'm too old, I'm too sick, I don't have enough money. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough food. I don't have enough of something. Are you holding back in these times? Or are you trusting God even more and giving more of yourself and finding ways to do it? Do I approach prayer based on how I view my own significance, or do I first consider how God's glory will be seen through my life? Simply put, do I view myself as being small and insignificant, and therefore I pray very small and insignificant prayers? Or do I continually remember that because I am small and insignificant even to other people, that God can use me even more because he gets the glory? How do you approach your prayers? Do you approach it based on how important you think you are or are not? Or do you pray prayers saying, God, but if you would use me, other people would see you in it because they know it's not me. They know it's not my money. They know it's not my fame. They know it's not my prestige. They know it's not my good looks. They know it's not my eloquent words. I'm really just nobody. So God, please use me as an example of what it means to trust you even more. Is your faith such that you can be trusted to have calamity and tragedy strike you? In your current situation, is God making an example of you or lifting you up as a model of trust? I phrase the first part of that this way. Can you be trusted? Lots of times we look at people and think, well, why do they have life so good? Because they can't be trusted to be faithful. They can't be trusted in times of calamity to be a great example. If you're going through struggles and trials and tribulations and all types of things, very often God is saying, it's because I trust you. I know that you can handle it. I know that you will continue to love me and be loyal to me and be faithful to me. Is God using you as a model, or is he making an example out of you? When we face struggles, sometimes we can get to the place where we feel like God is punishing you. Like the lady said, look at, are you trying to show me up for my sin? And really what God is saying is, no, I'm lifting you up as a model. Do we have the heart and the desire that we want to be models of trust? Models of what it means to trust God and be unswerving and unyielding in our faith. And finally, where does God want to send you to carry his message for maximum impact, but you must first be willing to go? I didn't really make too much of a point on this, but it's important to note that Elijah was a prophet who was sent to go somewhere where nobody else had been sent up to this point. He said, leave Israel. You know, there were prophets in Judah. He said, no, don't go there either. I want you to go outside and find some pagan widow and her son. There's a lot of, especially during this time, there's a lot of very unorthodox ways in which God can use us. There's a lot of people that we could impact, but first, we have to be willing to be sent. When you look at the example of Elijah, he shows up and he speaks affirmatively and boldly. He didn't ask 10,000 questions and he didn't come with doubt. He showed up and he spoke as the man of God to someone who was a foreigner. Are we willing to go places that other people otherwise in their conventional wisdom wouldn't go? Are we willing to do some things that are unorthodox? While you're facing your own calamity, or while you're facing your own difficulties and strife, are you still willing to go and serve others? Or will you hold back?